Hello, all you podcast listeners out there. This is your co-host, Zach Root, and I would just like to welcome you guys to the fifth episode. I had an opportunity to sit down with my father, who was sitting on my right, and his two college buddies. Tom was on my left, and Joe was sitting across the table. And we quickly dove into their crazy amount of races, their diet, or I guess lack of. There was also some playful trash talk along the way. A little bit of language, so I guess that's a forewarning there. But that's what I guess you get when you stick three college buddies back in the same room together. Hope you all get a chance to enjoy. Go. Hello, everyone. We are going off the front with, for those that don't know, my father, Steve Root, Tom Anderson, and Joe Hawkins, who was clapping. That was, of course, Joe. These guys got a lot of respect for. Obviously, it's my father, so I have to have, I guess I'm by default, I have to have respect for him. But Joe and Tom have been doing this crazy, we'll talk about it in a bit, but the way they are pretty athletic and pretty active in their lifestyle is pretty cool, and we're going to go over it. They actually, was it 2 weeks ago? Was Key West?
Week and a half ago. Well, 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
So 2 weeks ago tomorrow, they did their, well, we don't know. We'll go over that here. You've done how many? So Tom did some homework before this.
Yeah, I did a little studying. It was my 30th half marathon, and then I did 13 marathons, and then we may talk later about our 50-mile race.
Yeah, so you did you've done an ultra. All you guys did the ultra together.
Right.
And then I was talking to my dad the other day. Tom and you did Boston together, but Joe, you were a Boston finisher, but a different year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So go. We got some Boston.
10.
So we got some Boston folks. They did an ultra together. The Key West was their kind of a cool little, they all went to IU, right? Met at dorm?
Well, I met Tom in the dorm, and then Joe, I don't know how Joe got in.
I used to crash the parties.
He was friends with Tom, right?
Yeah. Joe and I go back to second grade, but we actually became better friends when we got to college, and Joe came up my sophomore year, and would always come over to our parties over the dorm.
So that's my freshman year?
Yeah, your freshman year.
I don't remember him coming to the dorm.
It would have been late. You didn't remember.
You were in bed. Or three sheets to the wind.
Obviously, the next year you guys roomed together.
Right, yeah. You'd already drank your six beers and went to bed.
And then after that, Tom got lucky and somehow first job in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And got to. Did you watch the IU national championship game or just party with them after?
Both. Went to the game. That was the 80s. I moved to New Orleans in 81. We obviously won the national championship
81.
That year. But I went down 2 months after that. And then 87, when they were there, I still lived there. So
okay. And I will forever be jealous of Tom's photo with, is it Key Smart, right? The guy who hit the game-winning shot.
Yep, Key Smart.
And you have a photo with him the night after the...
Yeah, about 2 or 3 hours.
That's so cool. You gotta admit, though, going to that game, you couldn't see shit.
No, I was I was in the Superdome in New Orleans. And
oh, jeez.
I had about the worst seat in the house.
Because your first year in New Orleans, my senior year in college, we went down to your place. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And you had two tickets to the tournament, the Final Four. And
right.
So I think Martina and I went.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was useless because we were so high up there you couldn't even see what was going on.
So Martina's
kind of a good experience.
Martina's another one of their college friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to get some depth on how old we are?
Oh, no. Here we go.
Do you?
Yeah.
So when I was 15 living in Mississippi, I told my mom I was going to Rusty and Sly's. Sly and Rusty said they were staying at my house. And we drove to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for the Mideast Regional, where IU took on Alabama and Marquette in 1976.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
When they won it. So that's when you go see some basketball. I can tell you it's about row 13.
Steve doesn't know how to mute his phone.
Back then, they did not use superdomes and bullshit like that.
Yeah.
Right.
So you were you an IU fan then?
Yeah.
Okay, because you grew up in Indiana.
And I had to take all that shit from the SEC, man, back in
down in Mississippi.
75 when those bastards got beat by Kentucky.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So they're all four of us are IU grads, so we're trying to keep the podcast upbeat after that game we just watched and just witnessed. So there's all that, and so you've done. So after New Orleans, you did what did you do after?
Run in New Orleans at all? A little bit, but not much.
And then Joe was all over the place, D.C. and St. Louis. Did you do any races out there?
No, I never. I ran because a friend of that, Rusty, when I was living in St. Louis, I'd never lived in the same address for more than 4 years. Wow. I was living in St. Louis, and a friend of mine was going to get married in New York. He goes, I run marathons. We're going to have a marathon wedding. And, you know, you can always tell somebody because the question is, I'll do it. How far is a marathon? So I practice running in our neighborhood about 6 miles. That's what I got up to.
In St. Louis.
Do you remember what your time was?
I had 4 hours and like almost 45 minutes, somewhere in that range.
For never doing one, that's
so I got out there and that's
that because I cannot prove it. That was before the internet came out. Right. Yeah. That's where we go out there and this guy is running, his girlfriend ran, and we the night before we partied like hell. We went to the Bulls played a game. Michael Jordan scored like 50 something points. We drank beer and I was like, when does this race start? And they said, you gotta be on the ferry at 6 a.m. And I saw all these people, and he was on a different one. And then I got on, and I saw these people throwing away their, because they gave you tokens to get on a bus if you couldn't make it. And I thought, that has to be for pussies. So I threw mine in the water. And then I saw these teams that were like Team Italy and team stuff. And I had white cotton gym shorts on with a red Indiana t-shirt with plastic block Indiana letters on it. So I'm sure these guys where I'm from. And they split you up, and it started sprinkling. They split us up because when you run over the first bridge, the officials run on the fast people or the official people run on the top of the bridge. I ran under the bridge. The women, I don't know where the hell they came from. You didn't meet them until you got over the bridge when you all merged after about 2 miles. And I can remember I was approaching mile five. One of the people in front of me on the boat going over were Team Italy. And they had these cool-ass uniforms. Adidas shoes and all this kind of shit. I bought a pair of airline, they called them Nike Airline. I worked at airlines. I thought, this looks kind of cool. So I bought those, were how I picked my shoes. I got about 4 miles into it. I thought, I wished I had my token. And then I was running along and I saw a dude from Italy. Because I thought, what in the hell am I doing here? And this guy, I'd never seen this in my life. He had shit his pants. And you talk about getting a second wind. I thought, you know what? I may be a dumbass, but I didn't come all the way to Italy and shit my pants. And from that point on, it was just take your time and get her done. And I saw some. Then you also saw, because this was in 1986, because I saw some people in wheelchairs. I'd never seen a wheelchair person competing.
Okay.
They had almost regular wheelchairs, so I saw them on the bridges. So I got done, and we immediately started drinking, and I lost toenails. I didn't realize that was something you could do. So, yeah, it was a great experience.
So that was your first race?
That was my first race.
Okay.
And when was your first race?
So I lived in New Orleans from 81 to 88, and so I did run a couple races in around 87, 88, and then we had our first child and then subsequently second, third. So kind of took it off. And the whole reason I got in running when I turned about 40 years old, I think it was 39 or 40. The year was the year 2000. My daughter, who's now 32, wanted to do the mini marathon in Indianapolis, the half marathon, and wanted to do that race. She was in sixth grade, and so I said, well, I'd train and do it with her. And so that was my first race.
And basically, that was May of 2000 and pretty much ran ever since. I actually got shin splints in that race and took a month or two off and really wasn't sure if I was ever going to run again. And Joe had recently moved back to Indiana, and we ended up doing the Colt Stampede, which was a race in August. And so all of a sudden I said, hey, we ought to start running. And that's really how this all started. Joe and I started running together. That was August 2000. And then, Steve, when did you come in?
Well, I don't know if you called me or what, but you were doing the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah.
And
the next year.
Yeah, the next year in 2001. And so I can't remember if you just called me or how we did it, but right. Then the three of us started training.
Yeah, basically now for 20 years, almost we've had a few hiccups along the way, but for 20 years, we've all been running together now. I wouldn't have invited you if I knew you were going to beat me every race.
So there's one disclaimer I do want to say on the podcast is that you're going to hear a lot of tough love from these guys. And, you know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, the funniest thing about that whole race for me is we're doing this training, right?
Which race?
The Chicago.
Chicago, the first one together.
We're doing the training, and Joe is like, hurt or whatever, and he's telling Joe, well, there's a 5K here in Indiana you can run while we're running the race. Joe's like, bullshit, I'm running the race. Yeah, was great.
We are a little competitive, but Joe, have you ever beat Steve in a race? I know I haven't.
Well, in heck, some of the halves.
Yeah.
But
we dusted him. Well, we did that thing. We blew his doors off down in, when were we in Tennessee?
Cedar Frost bike.
Yeah, half marathon because I quit.
Yeah.
My knee was.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one sitting at this table that hasn't quit in the middle of a race.
I haven't done the.
I'm trying to think if I ever have before.
Besides that one.
I did.
Besides that one. Quit. Other than that one. What's that?
I didn't really quit.
He just got a car ride.
One in Milwaukee. Yeah. He didn't really quit that one.
They didn't have Uber. They didn't have Uber back then. So what did you do?
Hitchhiked. I was having difficulties, and of all things, a girl stops by and says, "Do you need a ride?" And it sounded pretty damn good, and I felt like shit. I said, "You know, yeah, I'll take a ride." And then she said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I've got to get towards the finish line. You know, I'm doing this race." And first, she started heading home. She forgot where she was going. And I said, no, you really got to take me to. So she took me up and dropped me off along the lake.
This was the Lakefront Marathon in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so at about a little over mile 13 is when I was just like, said, this is bullshit. Because the wind was blowing and stuff. And I don't know. We were trying to qualify for Boston. That wasn't going to happen. So I thought, shit. And then when she just, you know, said, you want to ride? I thought, God, out of the blue, it must have been meant to be. And when she dropped me back off on this open field, she goes, you got to get over there to the curb. That path is what you want to follow along the lake. I got over and I was walking, and then I was pretty damn close to the finish. And everybody, you got your name on your bib. You can do it, Joe. Go, go. So I start running a little bit, and then I start passing people. Because I was feeling strong, you know.
Oh, no.
And I came charging in, man. And they're calling my name and shit. And I was like, all right, on, man. So, like, it was a tough-ass race. This was, like, at 3:15. I finished that thing. And they're meddling me and handing me beers. And I'm like, this is not bad. And then I looked at the official time. And it was because the wind was, it blew over the marker. So I crossed the last working marker. Yeah, you know, and then the other next one they had available was the one that was the finish line. So I had a tremendous time. Qualified for San Francisco seating and all kinds of great shit.
So Tom ran too, and Tom.
So I ran. We were both, actually, that was in 2004 or 5, and probably the best shape that I was in for running in these 20 years. So we're both trying to qualify for Boston. And so as I kept going. I knew Joe had dropped off because we were running together for the first, whatever it was, 13 miles. And he dropped off, and I kept kind of looking. He was getting farther and farther behind. And so up to about 22 miles, I was on pace to qualify for Boston. This wind was in our face the whole time. But about 22 miles, I kind of hit the wall, and I started slowing down and got to 23, 24. And I realized at 24 miles, I wasn't going to qualify for Boston. So I'm kind of depressed, jogging the last 2 miles in. And as I'm coming up to the finish, I look up, and Joe's at the finish line with a can of beer in his hand and a medal on. And it was like, so as I'm, he's running alongside of me, you know, and I was like, what the hell? When did you pass me? He says, hurry up, get your medal, and I'll tell you. What do you mean? I said, did you qualify for Boston? I said. He said, kind of. I said, what do you mean, kind of? He says, well, just get your medal and let's get out of here. So as we went off the course, and he had a beer for me and stuff, he told that story, and he said, well, I took off right there and passed and qualified for Boston. I missed it by, but in defense of Joe, he never went to Boston based on that. He did not. He did run Boston.
He was thinking about it.
He was thinking about it. And that race was in, I think it was in September.
What's his name off? Berger, right?
Yeah. So that was in September.
Todd Berger, that's the buddy on their running group.
Like, yeah. You can't go.
Yeah. So I did that in September, or we did, and then I was in such good shape and so depressed that we didn't qualify. I went down. My son had a soccer tournament in Memphis, Tennessee, and I rode down on the team. They had chartered a bus to go down to Memphis, and the St. Jude Marathon happened. I looked online. It was the weekend that his soccer tournament was. So we rode the bus down. We stayed in a room, and I slept on the floor in the room. And we got Friday night, we got to Memphis about midnight. I slept in the room on the floor. And set the alarm for 5 a.m., took a taxi downtown, and ran the Memphis Marathon by myself. And that's when I actually qualified for Boston.
And still showed up for Sam's soccer game.
Yep, I did.
So those that don't know, all of them, so they went to New Orleans. Joe looks like he was everywhere. Dad, you went to Minnesota, Cleveland after college. You're a year younger than these guys, as far as grade, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so so they went, they graduated a year before you. You were in Bloomington another year, and then you went.
Joe stuck around the extra year.
Joe did a fifth of victory lap.
I know when things are right, and that was a good place to be.
Yeah.
So you went from, bottom line is they all ended up being within a 10-mile radius and raising.
We all went separate. Far, you know, I went to Ohio and Virginia. You know,
Tom down in New Orleans.
We all ended up back here. It was really cool.
Yeah, so you went from, I think I did the math, from Cleveland to New Orleans is over 1,000 miles. So they went from partying and blooming together.
Yeah.
To 1,000 miles apart, and then somehow, and you obviously didn't plan it or anything, you just ended up back in the Carmel's like the epicenter.
The first couple of years that we were, and I don't, this Joe may not have been back here quite yet, but Tom lived in Carmel, and we lived in Pike, and we rarely saw each other.
Right.
I saw him more when he lived in New Orleans because we met in Georgia, went to the football game, and came up for tailgate.
Yeah, it was really the running thing.
United us again.
Yeah. So you hear us talk. We mentioned Berger, and I guess Martina's not in the running group. But how did that come about? Tom's kind of the president, founder.
Joe and I started running in, like I said, in August of 2000, and then that next fall, spring, we decided we were going to do Chicago, and your dad joined us in 2001 and trained with us. And then Joe brought some people he worked with. And I was just talking about this. We ran this morning. We ran an 8-miler this morning. I was just talking to somebody. There's about probably 15 people in our group now that run. But probably over these 20 years, we probably had 100 people. Some people come for 1 week and that's it. They're not running anymore. Some people, 2 or 3 people have come, ran with us a couple years, and then they've moved out of town and stuff. So, but the group just kind of, we kept... You know, you'd be at breakfast afterwards, and somebody'd see you have your running clothes on, and they'd come up and talk to you. And so, you know, we would invite, hey, come out and meet us on Saturday. We meet on Saturday mornings for the last 20 years, like at 6:30. Big difference now is back when we first started training, our long runs were 3 miles, and we were done in a half hour or less.
6 miles, yeah. and then now it's 10.
Now it's 10, unless we're training.
Traditionally.
Yeah, if we're training for a marathon, we, you know, get up to, you know, 22 miles on our training runs on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, and similar to myself and Josh on the Triloco team, very, very organic.
Right.
Because you, one, Nicole joined the group.
Yeah.
You guys were running, and Shelly just said, you guys had seen her a couple Saturdays in a row in the mornings, and right. Shelly just yelled to her, hey, we're here, want to join us? And then she joined the running group, and it's a very organic, you just saw people in running clothes on the Monon or wherever.
Yeah, she met all the qualifications.
So shout out to all of the, do you have a name for the running group?
Team Monon is what we
shout out to all the Team Monon out there. Hopefully they all listen.
Yeah, it's
yeah, they're going to.
Yeah, the whole group. There's, like I said, there's 15 to 16 of us that are pretty consistent now. We were running this morning. Thing is, we're all getting old. The two of the oldest are 60, one of them 67, and
yeah.
I think the youngest one that runs with us now probably is mid 50s or low 50s.
She's so we got 54, 55.
Yeah, so we got about a 15 year span, but we've noticed in the last couple of years, there's a lot of, I don't know if it's old age or injuries have crept in. And so, like today, we ran and there were, Joe was there,
yeah, we have
Steve was there, I was there, Jim McMahon,
Marcy,
was that it? So yeah, we had so five people out of the 15 show.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it goes in ways. I know there was a year, and this is how I got into triathlon, was I can't remember if Jim was doing it that summer or I had always been, I played soccer. And so I had it running endurance from soccer and just grew up on a bike. And then swimming, I swam till high school competitively. And I can't remember if it was you or mom, dad, that said, why don't you try a triathlon? And of course I get your Schwinn out and we go up to Cicero and I did my first one and I think it was the running group. It was either Jim or Marcy does them.
Yeah, there's probably five or six people in our group that do triathlon.
Yeah, they're not just the running group.
Yeah,
they're...
Jim was probably really the first person. Joe does some, but not back then.
Yeah, so that's how I kind of got into the whole thing and gave it a go.
You know, I said 100 people. So, Zach, you obviously have joined us a few times to run. My daughter just moved back in town. She's been running with us, so periodically our kids will join, and now you kids are all grown up, so you know, that age, that 15-year span isn't that different when you're 60 years old. It's a big difference when you're 30 and 15, but,
Between being 35 and what we are, the speed is much different.
Yeah, your speed starts to slow down.
Oh, yeah, it's way different than it was.
Yeah.
Even 10 years ago.
Yeah, you can tell Joe's starting to age a little bit.
I don't know if it's that or something hits you.
Yeah.
And then injuries get, they piss you off because they don't go away like they used to.
Right. I see. You know, the recovery's not.
The recovery is you could recover and even sometimes run a little injured. Now, if you don't do it right, you just wind up injured again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I spent a lot of time doing that kind of shit, thinking I'm good to go, and you're not. So.
Yeah, I talked to Shelly today, and so she's one of the girls in the group, and she's probably 55.
No, I think she's 53 or
50. Very good dad.
Yeah, this is recorded. Yeah, she's going to come after you.
She looks like she's 35.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
No, she had a stress fracture. Of course, she's self-diagnosed, right? So we don't really know for sure. But so she... she was just doing elliptical, and she told me that she hurt her Achilles in her other leg.
On the elliptical.
And so now she's not doing anything.
Yeah. The group we've had.
Because I asked her, I think you said she was running, and she's not. She said she's not doing anything. She's not doing CrossFit or anything.
Yeah, our group has come and gone. We've got two or three people that still join us for breakfast, but, you know, we've got back problems, Dave Schwartz, and we've got probably the fastest runner in the whole group, Todd Ponder.
Well, I don't know about that.
I've
handled him several times.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but he's fighting some injuries. Yeah. And then I said I've been running 20 years straight, but I took a year off because I broke my hip in a bike accident. So I didn't run for 53 weeks.
Yeah, these guys are, we didn't even That's why I like telling people that the podcast is just a conversation.
A fucked up shoulder. Broken shoulder. So, yeah.
A tragic bike accident.
Well, you guys did the... Were you there doing the rain ride when Tom hurt his hip?
No, I did it the same.
No.
You were.
Yeah. Yeah,
but Joe wasn't doing it. But so we have add that to the list.
Yeah.
Did you add that to your paid events?
No, I didn't. I didn't add that.
So
that's a different.
Dad,
different.
You've done the rain. So those who don't know, there's a ride across Indiana for the lesser athletes out there.
It's 1.5.
Yeah, it's 163 miles.
You've been 105.
I got 105 the first time.
Yeah,
and then 163.
And then
I've done both of them.
Tell that story about how you, I mean, if you don't mind.
So we were doing, some of the group started thinking about riding, and so we all ended up taking up riding, so we were riding some, and so there's a rain ride right across Indiana. It's 163 miles, runs, people not familiar, runs from Terre Haute on the west all the way to Richmond on the east. It's a one-day ride, so we were riding. And
you're acting like somebody outside our group's going to listen to this. Yes. Like, somebody out of the country, you know. Somebody
just
out
trying
of
to
the
get the geography right.
Not understand what that
hey,
means,
hey,
right?
Hey, this is a broad podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Don't knock it. Don't knock it yet, all right?
I've got friends in Denver and Florida.
Oh, okay, that's true.
Tom will listen. He'll listen to it like five times.
Oh, yeah.
He'll get our listen count up.
Right, yeah.
But we were kind of in a peloton, you know, all drafting off each other, and we're about 105 miles into the ride, and the very lead rider kind of pulls. People who ride realize if you draft, it really helps. I was the second one in line, and there was 10 people behind me.
Yeah, at least. It was a huge group, and we were
yeah, we're flying. Well, and in fact, I can tell you exactly.
20.
Yeah, that's what caused it.
25.
What happened was the lead rider, you know, he's hand signaled that he was going to drop off the back, and I was going to be the lead rider, and I was the second one in line, and I looked down to see how fast we were going just so I could keep that pace, and when I looked, we were going about 22, 23 mile an hour. My wheel drifted into his and hit it. And I ended up flipping on my bike. Luckily, the 10 to 15 riders behind me saw what was going on and swerved around. And I flipped, broke my collarbone, broke my hip, actually my acetabulum. So ended up in a wheelchair for a while and crutches. But and the doctor told me to never run. Doctor said, don't ever run again.
Yeah,
I always ran like 30 races.
Don't ever run again. And you're at work in a wheelchair the next what?
Next
how many days later?
A week.
Yeah, a week later.
He told me never to run again, and I said, "Well, how long does it take this thing to heal before you can't damage anymore?" He said about a year. So I waited 53 weeks and started running again. And fortunately for me, I hopefully it won't come back to haunt me when I'm older. But that was 2011. That happened. 2012, I started running again, and I've had no aches or pains whatsoever. So
good. Yeah, I had a shoulder surgery in 2 Novembers ago and was out for six. I was in a sling for 6 months, and so everybody's dealt with some sort of something. I mean, I recovered easy because I'm still younger, unlike you guys. But
yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, so the epic ultra that I don't know. I tell people this
stupidest thing I've ever.
I'll let some.
That's exactly what I tell.
I'll let somebody else talk about it. It was stupid.
Tom,
I came in last place.
I don't know about
there
Joe,
is,
but for me, it was like
all this. When I was when my dad was 50, he lost his leg due to I don't want to say diabetes, drinking, smoking, some other things. And I always have these crazy benchmarks. When I'm 50. And I thought about this, and I always float my ideas, most of which are bad, to Tom.
And what does Tom say? Yes to all of them?
No, he says no to all of them. But I float them out there, and I started trying to get this 50 thing, and I knew with Steve it wouldn't work if he thought it came from me. So then Tom started talking more about doing 50, and I just kind of wanted to do it just to see if I could do that. And then, you know, that's how you do this stuff. You think of something new because you're bored. And then it started becoming serious that we were going to do this 50. What's that?
Your mouth covering your head.
Anyway,
your hand might be covering your mouth.
We started becoming, you know, it's more and more evolving that when we're turning 50, we're going to run 50. And then the training was just, you think about today we ran 8, and I was like, I don't know if I want to run 8. Training.
That's what I was going to ask.
Tom was like, well, today we're going to run 30, whatever the hell the
30.
Number was, 30. And we're thinking,
we're
going to
stop and eat.
But he goes, but we get to stop at McDonald's and we get to order food. And I thought,
Well, that doesn't sound bad. Because we were going to get a freaking Big Mac during a run. I thought, that's pretty good.
And, that was the dumbest thing ever.
We're running, we're thinking, you know what? But I think at mile 18, he's going to let us have a burger.
But, you know, we really underestimated that. And I don't, our training was not even... I think our longest run was probably 35.
Yeah, about 35.
So it's safe to say that training was probably the reason it was idiotic. You didn't put in the time.
No. It was the whole thing. You think so? Idiotic. Yeah, it was.
It's such a bad idea that there's no reason to train. Just to get that, like when I did New York, or when I tried to do that Ironman thing. It's like, you know, if you really thought about it, put in the work to do it, you realize way sooner.
Yeah.
I love
race day and how bad
it is the day before race day, so we're driving up in Tom's van, right? We got five of us. We're driving up. We stop at Arnie's Hot Dogs in Munster and have hot dogs. Oh, my fries.
Well, at 10 o'clock at night, right?
Yeah, well, like we get into Chicago. We stayed in a pretty nice hotel. Yeah,
but some of us, I don't know who slept on the floor.
Joe had a mattress, air mattress.
Yeah, one that actually blew up.
You mean one that 2 hours later you wake up on the floor still?
Well, so Key West,
we had one room.
Tom gave him, just this race we just did, Tom, we go to the campground, we're camping the night before this half marathon, and he's like, I got it'll have a slow leak. It'll probably last morning. 20 minutes into camping, Joe's flat on the ground. That was great. But anyway, back to Chicago. Then we get there. We sleep 4 or 5 hours, and we get up, and the race is it's like 6, I think.
Yeah.
And we drive down there. We go to that.
Flag pole's just going.
It was a beach house or bathhouse.
63rd Street Beach House, right across from Science and Industry.
And I can remember we're in there. It's 6 in the morning. This is October. And it is sleeting.
October 31st.
You can see the sleet in the
sideways.
Yeah, in the light that was there, you know, for the park. And we're all huddled up against the side of the building. Everybody running, and it was. This was how, you know, it was such a big race that the guy comes out with the mic and says,
"This is Chicago Marathon, right?
No, this is Chicago.
This is the ultra.
It's called the Lakefront."
Yeah,
50 or yeah. But it wasn't really that big
up.
A race.
It wasn't. It was huddled up. You throw your stuff on this tarp.
They did have a U.S. team, though. Remember the U.S. Olympic? Or not? Yeah.
But they were like, ready, set, go.
Yeah.
That was it. It was like...
No gun, no.
No, no.
I don't even think they played the national anthem.
Oh, no, they did. They were like, ready, set, go.
They said, we'll see you in like 9 hours.
Yeah, and then we just took off. And
so it was... One of the questions I have for you is, for all three of you, is what is your nutrition to allow you to be able to do it this long?
Oh, shit. We are the worst.
So, those that don't know, these three are probably, don't ever follow their sometimes training regime. Your marathon training stuff is probably, you guys probably have it down by now, but... Okay. The nutrition, I don't know about Tom and Joe, but my dad's been all over the map with his nutrition. And I love having my dad tell the story about when you first did your couple first marathons, what was your pre-race meal?
These were 10Ks.
So before 10K, what was your pre-race?
It was like a big Snicker bar and a Mountain Dew was my pre-race ritual. I swear to God, when I was in Ohio, my first race... Chugging a Mountain Dew and a big Snicker bar.
You guys have came from that to gels and honeycomb energy, things you pop halfway through that help your endurance, and you guys are eating Mountain Dews and
salt
I don't
tablets
know.
Tablets and all the others. Oh, yeah, it was great.
I would have to admit that'd be my one area of improvement would be nutrition. Before the Boston Marathon in 2006 that Steve and I did, Joe and I did in 2010.
That was great.
I had a friend from New Orleans that we hadn't seen each other in 15, 20 years. And so the night before the race, he lived in Connecticut. Me and my wife, Lori, we drove over and met him and his wife and actually their kids at a place and had dinner. And I had meatloaf the night before the race, before the Boston Marathon.
Meatloaf, it was great.
And I don't think meatloaf's high on the running pre-meal schedule.
Pre-workout meal.
Yeah.
It was like that when I did that inland trace trail thing with Graber.
Right.
We went to...
Dave Graber's another member of the running group.
So we did it together. We did it... I can't remember why. You guys did Chicago, and we did it because Dave had hernia surgery.
Yes.
So we did a accelerated thing. But when we went to that, we went to Zach's grandma's...
up in Cleveland.
Yeah, up in Cleveland. So we went there for dinner.
Was I alone?
It was like meatloaf and chicken and all this pasta and bread and everything else. It was like, oh my God, I don't know where
that side of the family is Italian. So when you sit down to eat a meal with grandma, she's going to cook the full sides and everything.
Peppers and And Graber was like, I don't know. He's just passing the plate around. He's not getting any of it right.
That's been the problem with this. I look at it as a trade-off. I'm like, well, if I run, I should be able to eat what the hell I want. If I run, I should be able to drink. I mean, it's bad because you're thinking there's a lot of races where I start off hungover. And you're just thinking this race is really going to clear my mind. And then I hope to have beer.
Joe
is a horrible way to do it, but it worked a long time.
Joe actually was the only one I think. So, you know, we talked about doing the ultra, the 50 miler, and the marathons and half marathons. Actually, us three and nine other people did a relay race, 200-mile relay.
That's right, the Bourbon Chase Trail.
Yeah,
and so you show up on one day, and we ended up doing it in about 24 hours, 200 miles.
26, wasn't it?
26 maybe.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, and at the end, you go through all these bourbon things, but, you know, you're not really supposed to be drinking bourbon, but Joe had a little bourbon before the whole race started. You know, we were up for, 26 hours straight. Actually, you had to figure out how to sleep and all that, so.
Yeah, we had two bands of six, and his relay was 12 people.
Yeah, so.
It's a logistic.
Yeah, what happens is one run will maybe run 5 miles. Then he hands off to the next person. The man runs 7, and the next person runs 4. It's really neat. I would say maybe one of the funner events I've ever done was probably one of the more memorable ones was that relay race.
Yeah.
And then now Steve didn't join us. You didn't do the 2007 Chicago Marathon. So Joe and I did that with a group, and our group all stayed downtown Chicago. And anybody who knows me knows I'm kind of frugal. And we so Joe and I decided we didn't want to stay in a big Chicago, so we stayed.
Did you stay in the birdie van?
No, we stayed. No. We camped at the Indiana Dunes, and we camped, and then we caught the train that goes the North Shore across
the North Shore
Chicago.
Line.
Cost us about $6, and then we ran the marathon. And then I called ahead and found a bicycle shop that let us pay $2 to do a shower after the race, and then. We went out with our friends that did stay down in town. Then we rode the train back to the campground and camped. So, and then I sold my medal afterwards and my shirt because I had enough medals and shirts. So that race cost me about $40 all in.
Yeah. But you know what? When Tom's talking about camping before a race, we camp for a race. Done it, I guess, just twice. But when you do, they always talk about you need to sleep the night before that. So it's like, I don't give a shit. You know, we went up there and you want to stay in the campground. I'm like, yeah, because we just lay there.
And you don't. We...
It's kind of nice because I thought, you're always thinking about your little, whatever little ailments you might have or aches. I thought, you know, if we sleep on a slope, I bet I can sleep with my head down here and my feet up here, and that will help my circulation. And, you know, you can't get this at a Holiday Inn, brother, or a Marriott. But you can get it at where the hell were we?
Indiana Dunes. It's
Indiana Dunes, man. It was
Become a national park as of. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
And we pull up, and that's when Tom was cruising in his convertible Mustang. So we pull in there, and we both crawl into the old pup tent. Wow! I know the whole campground was thinking.
So those that don't know,
about sleeping the night before. Getting a good night's sleep the two nights before the actual event. So we certainly did that at Key West. People don't know. So we stopped it. We picked Joe up.
We were 24 hours late, first of all.
Yeah, we drove down. Tom and I drove. And we met Joe down in...
yeah, this was just 2 weeks ago.
Bonita Springs. And so we get down there on Friday, and the race is actually on Sunday.
Right.
So we drive down, and another guy that runs with us, Jim McMahon, we go there picking up Joe. We stay the night with them, and we're playing euchre, and we proceed to drink a half a bottle of Crown.
And a bottle of Johnny Walker.
Yeah, Johnny Walker, too. So, we are just like
excited. This is two nights before the race.
Yeah, we drank a 12-pack, too. Yeah. Oh, and but that was from early on. But then we go to bed. I don't even know what time we went to bed.
Yeah, but we
were up at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, because we had basically from Bonita Springs, which is near Fort Myer, to Key West. We had a little traffic once we got on the Keys. It was almost a 6-hour drive.
Yeah, there. Yeah. So. And so, and then we camped.
Then we camped. And then we did the race.
That was great.
We camped and we did the race.
Oh, yeah.
Those that don't know, everyone referred to the Birdie Van. Joe had a little business venture of his own and was selling bird seed and bird feeders for a little while, and bought this van, and he called it the bird.
Hello Birdie was the business. Yeah. Right?
Hello Birdie was the business. And I think he drove
that Hello Birdie van up to Kendallville. I didn't go up.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, so so my dad has done a triathlon. We went up to the lake that he grew up ice skating, fishing.
Mixer Lake.
Used to take the motorcycle out the ice and drop it and sit on one side of the motorcycle and then slide across. And he got to swim in it how many years later in his first try up in Kendallville? Joe slept in the Birdie van, and Joe, there for a while, that was his tent.
You guys
was the back of his van.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great story. So we're up. Me and my dad are, of course, it just is the theme, sleeping in a tent the night before events, right? So we're in.
And then Joe's got the van.
Joe's in the van. We had a couple friends that had campers.
And then Jim and Shelly
were in the hotel.
They got a hotel room, which they were the smartest of the bunch.
And I think before, I'm going to blame it on you, but I think before you were like, wouldn't it be hilarious if there was a giant storm and ice tonight? And sure enough, it'd be about
midnight.
Yeah, about midnight.
I swear, that lightning bolt.
So we were right next it was a softball complex, right?
Softball.
You know, they had the big lights. I swear, four lightning bolts throughout the night hit one of those light poles right by where we were.
And it was raining sideways, and we're sitting in there, and all of a sudden it's like drip.
Yeah.
Drip. Fucking tent starts leaking. We're in there, and it's just raining sideways.
Yeah. We had a blow up mattress, I had a sleeping pad. And you had a blow-up mattress, and my sleeping pad's only about an inch thick.
Yeah.
So you're in a tent, and you think, you know, what? How big is the blow-up mattress? Is 6 inches higher than the sleeping pad. And sure enough,
there was a moat all the way around.
So I got off the sleeping pad and got on the mattress with my dad at, 30? And you're how old are you? And we're sleeping next to each other in a tent.
The best thing about
with
the
moat around
it's like, 2 a.m, it's raining sideways, and I gotta take a leak. And get out there. And just,
I was already out
outside
there.
Outside the tent.
Yeah. It's raining.
Standing out there peeing outside.
Nobody can see you.
Like your dad.
I was out there peeing. Sure enough, I hear him get out. He goes, "Oh, you scared the shit out of me." I go, "I'm just pissing, dude." He's like, "Right there?" And I'm like, "Nobody's out here. It's pouring down rain. I'm just getting sopping wet."
It was brutal.
That was bad. And that next day was beautiful. But man,
the next day ended up being nice.
The problem was the... So those that haven't done the... I think they still do the Kendallville Tri. If you ever get up there, the terrain is grassy, muddy, forested. So
it would have been good. It was a cross country. Yeah. That's the cross country.
Well, see,
course.
If you'd have been like me out in front, it wasn't so muddy. By the time you got where I was, there were all those footprints.
You did.
Joe winning. Did you win your age group in that?
Yeah. That was when I could still hoof it.
Yeah.
Joe talking about off the front or out front. So this Key West thing, just a week and a half ago, Steve was the fastest. I came in second, and Joe came in third, but you know, when we finished, we didn't, we kind of knew
third,
it,
but that actually, doesn't mean overall.
Yeah.
Or age group.
But,
or age yeah, group. Is,
but they had
that
unlimited.
Means between the three of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they had unlimited yeah. free beer.
We have our own podium.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that your Steve had about the three beers down before Joe finished.
Oh, yeah. That was the first, like you had said, that was the first race I'd ever been to that. They just had unlimited
beer. Yeah.
Beer. I mean, it was like,
okay,
yeah.
That's awesome.
It was like big ice yeah. down
bats when
full
we would
of beer.
Run Chicago.
They give you a little.
I would,
yeah,
well,
beer.
Chicago wasn't bad. It was sponsored, I don't know if it still is, by Goose Island.
I would assume so, because that's the brewery
so
there.
Running yeah. like, and I would just always think, I'm going to pass through here and blow off this shit about the shoe thing that they take off or your metal and shit. I just keep running, and I'd run all the way up there, and I'd say, "Hey, have you seen anyone else run up here today?" They say no. I go, "Well, I need a beer, because I didn't win, but I ran the furthest." Give me a freaking beer, man. And then give you beers, and I'd sit there, and then I'd walk back, and then I'd get my metal and my shoe and all that shit done later. But they, yeah. they gave you a full beer.
So it was unlimited beers after that race.
Key West.
So,
oh, yeah.
I've done the 317 race with my dad, which I'd recommend. It's a cool little.
Yeah.
And you get two free beers, a free Penn Station
you
sub.
Turn it
and
into four beers, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because they only allow two, and then you go through the line and only give them one ticket instead of five.
Yeah.
Worst, so you get
oh, yeah.
two fucking beers.
Free
oh, yeah.
beer ever was that Monumental Mile beer.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I yeah. didn't do it.
Was that?
Did you do it?
The Monumental Mile yeah. where you haul ass. Because
me and you did it last year, but you're not talking about
I didn't
beer
last,
it last
year.
Year. Okay, you were there. That's right, your daughter.
Yeah, Tom and I ran it the first year. The
very first year.
And I was like all excited because they give you a free beer at the end. So I thought, you know, I'll run a mile for a beer, and I'll run freaking hard. So we run down there, and we ran hard. We get down there, and I go to get my beer, and they're like, "You need ID." I'm like, "You motherfucker, you got my goddamn, you know, first of all, look at me,
yeah.
blind bat."
The problem with me is,
blind bat, and then you
it's
got,
on your bib.
It's on your bib. First of all, they got a thing to make sure you ran. They don't want to give a beer to somebody who just walks up with an ID. So there it is. It's got my name, my qualification, all this shit, and they're looking at the thing, and it says my age because I registered. So now we go. Not a mile, but we still have to go like
right.
half a mile to go get our IDs and come back. I thought, well, it'll be worth it. We get up there, and they got all these cans of beer, and they go, "Here's your free beer." And it's a Dixie cup of some sample of shit.
They don't do that now. The locals don't go slim on the alcohol after events, do they? Yeah.
They should not, no.
They don't.
No, they do. Well, you know, they also have their, they have a good variety, too.
Oh, yeah. From the folks down in Kentucky with bourbon. They bring bourbon up when they come down. So, yeah, you guys have been the full gamut, pretty inspirational.
I think the point now is we've always done this, at least, is try to find things to do. I mean, there's another one over there, right? So anyway, what we're always trying to do, at least now I look at this stuff, is I it's hard to win anything.
Or even
now,
PR, right?
Now it's hard. Well, PR's out, you know. Unless,
yeah.
Unless I pick something totally new that I've never done before.
Yeah.
But, you know, the tough part now is even just what do you want to do? So now I think it's going to become more destination. I would have never gone to Key West other than just to go to the destination.
That's cool what you guys did
so
that.
So now I got to have Tom. I got to keep floating Tom ideas and see which ones he wants to do. Because I sit around and spend a lot of time looking at what looks cool.
So it was
Oregon running in whatever, running in what you know, what's happening, and I'll filter it out and see if there's any interest.
Was Key West your idea then?
Well, I kind of sent it over to Tom, I think, to look at it. It's not going to happen on my own.
You know? Yeah, Joe would say, "Hey, we ought to do this," and then he leaves it up to me.
You get all the logisticals. You do your homework, whereas Joe just finds it on an ad online.
Right. Right.
And you actually do your homework like you did for this podcast.
Well, most of the time I tell him no.
Yeah. Well, part of it is, like, if somebody said, "Joe, what do you think about this? Let's do it." Oh, yeah. Well, the do it part would suck because it's not going to be executed.
Yeah.
Where if Tom decides he wants to do it, if he does decide he wants to do it, it'll all be organized and it'll work.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, sometimes though, it's just like this last trip. That was a long. That was a long.
Well, Joe flew down and flew back during the middle of the trip. Steve and I drove 3,200 miles, so we had it was 2 weeks. We both retired, so we got time to do that.
Yeah,
you know, we had one of our guys in our running group advise us that we should really wait till we're 62, but Steve and I didn't take his advice.
So, Joe, I do have to go over. We have to, for all those folks that get tired in the swim on a triathlon, we have to go over the, you call it the most efficient stroke in the game, right? It's called the
Squidward.
The Squidward. Yeah. So if you ever are just gasping for air on your swims.
I don't think Trilocos looked into this as they should.
Right. So yeah. So this is your, when did you first discover the Squidward?
When I tried to, and unfortunately, I tried to sign up for an Ironman full, and they were sold out, so I said,
fortunately,
I guess I'll do a pussy half. So I signed up, and then I thought the next thing I should just probably sign up for LA Fitness to get in a pool.
I signed up for a triathlon before you ever swam before.
December, and then January I got in a pool, and I thought, fucking 20 yards is long. Well, whatever it is, 25 or whatever.
25
I couldn't get there. I could not get there. I thought,
and you're signed up for a half Ironman.
Yeah, so I thought, how can you do this? And I can do the duck. Because I'd always swam kind of horizontal. Or vertical. Yeah. You know, my head's up here, and my feet are directly below me. And
doggy paddle
style, I would either go
almost
this direction to get the, if it's, depends on what it is. If you cliff dive, you just kind of swim this way. But if you're in the water and somebody has a ski rope over here, you do whatever you have to do to get this direction.
Yeah, directional swimming.
That's all I ever did.
Yeah.
Side stroke is always pretty effective.
Yeah, so
that's my go-to stroke is the side stroke.
You didn't know about the Squidward, though.
No, I didn't. I don't know if I could do
the Squidward. Freaking works. It rocks, man. And where it really rocks, you know, is when I'm not good in legs at all. Because you can't see where you're at.
The spotting's hard for a lot of people.
And you can breathe fine. You can check people out, and you can just take your, you know, you.
So how's it go? So what? Okay, let's go. Let's go over this
people
real quick.
Can't see.
Yeah, so they can't see you over going. Okay, so here we go. You ready? So you're. What are your legs doing?
You reach out above you and take a big
like
old
the
breath.
Backstroke. Yeah. Well,
except
not
it's not your stroke, and you're just doing like this. You're pulling down your water to your sides.
So you're doing the breaststroke with your arms,
upside
but on your
down.
Back,
like,
but on your back. So they're to your sides,
like
you're flapping your wings, like you're making a bird symbol to somebody.
Back.
But God,
you
and
know,
then
is, I'm go, sure this sounds great.
When you go
podcast,
whoosh,
right?
One
they're
time
like,
you go whoosh
what
and you stay straight.
Yeah, this is where we lost all of our listeners.
Yeah, but you glide. Now, yeah, I lost all the time.
What are your feet doing during this for all those that
you
need
the
to
same
get?
Thing, you just go, whoosh, but you get like a.
You're frog kicking.
Yeah, you do the
so
frog
you're frog
kick,
kicking
the
at
down,
the same exact time
and then
as
you're
your.
You're like your pencil man, baby. And you go straight. Well, you hope you go straight. Now, where it kicks ass, and I've only done it once, was you do the Louisville try. You've got. They're fucked when I get the Louisville try. Because I can see both sides now. I can see a bank, and I can see, if you can see both sides, I know I'm straight.
So those that don't know, the Louisville Try is in the Ohio River that separates Indiana from
fucked, because I can see both sides, I know I'm going straight.
So and there's a it's like an island in the Ohio River, and the sprint portion is between there's a body of water between the island and the.
Yeah.
The bank. Yeah. And so you can see, I've done it several times. You could see both sides if you stood there, and actually you can, because
so
there have been
there
parts.
I look at the competition, I go, whoosh, I see him behind me. I go, whoosh, I see him behind me. And I get out and I do all the other stuff. I don't even ride fast. I just ride to get ready for my run, you know. And I run, I get done, they give me that Louisville bat. I'm all done. I got my age done.
The age group award is it's really cool.
Now, where it doesn't work out is if somebody puts me in a, and this is where it's bad, is you get into deep water.
Yeah, or straight across.
Yeah, straight, but I can, if it's straight, I can kind of hang to the side of people and I'm not losing a lot of ground. But when you're going around buoys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like which is what, 80%?
Man, it's bullshit. Because you can't get to where you need to be, and there's people running over you and stuff.
Where was... Oh, that was Muncie. That was some girl, shit. You got 200 yards, and the girl is like, "Oh, do you need help?"
So listen, yeah, tell that yeah, story. Tell that story.
1.2 miles to go.
I've only had
0.2 into it. They're like, "Do you need help, sir?"
I think I've had two so far. Kendallville and a couple where I haven't had somebody actually ask me if I need help. Or if I'm going to make it.
So those that don't know, there's people on kayaks and boats and rowboats. They're lifeguards along the swim line next to the buoys. And Joe's been asking, sounds like 99.9% of the races you've been in where swimming's involved. They've asked you if you're okay, sir.
Yeah, so I usually just think all I got to do is get out of this thing. So it's funny because when I got out of the Muncie thing, I threw away my goggles, threw away all my shit. And I was having a pissy fit. Well, everybody else is running up there. I'm bitching at the water. I'm bitching it. And I thought, you know, it's not the best way to do your, what they call it, transition times.
Yeah.
And I'm so pissed at that water. I just want to go take a piss in the water before I leave and go up the hill because it's hard. I wish I knew how to swim. And part of it, because I'm so good at the Squidward, I never learn how to swim well enough because it's too easy to convert.
So if you get anything from this podcast, if you're ever in any event and you're struggling, hopefully you haven't been asked by one of the safety officials if you're okay, sir.
Yeah.
You should keep going. You'll be all right because there's almost always a Joe over there that's Squidward.
Yeah, and Joe's probably been in the medical tent after more races than anybody in our group, right?
Yeah, probably.
I think Donna went one time.
And Graber was in Boston.
What's his name?
Graber was.
Oh, who's the guy that we saw at the Mini? Scott? No. McQuarrie.
McCurdy.
McCurdy. Scott McCurdy's one of the runners of the group. And he's many times the fastest runner in the group. In the other half, he's not. His first Boston, he decided to go to a medical tent and take a nap. And they were going to transport him back to the finish line. And he decided he couldn't wear that shirt if he didn't finish. So he got up after a half-hour nap and finished the race.
It was funny because we went, Zach and I and Drew, and to see my daughter and
Drew's her husband
run the Mini. And so we went to the start and everything, and then we drove out by the track, saw him come on and off, and all of a sudden, here comes McCurdy's walking. So he's like, Scott's can I get a ride?
Scott's done.
He rode with us back to the finish.
Scott's done the Carmel Marathon with me the first 4 years we had it.
Yeah.
And we did the whole marathon. I don't know whether he beat me every time or he didn't.
There's no way he did because one time he took a nap, went home and slept.
I never really paid attention because I don't know if he ever did, because what would happen, he's, you know, if he ran his race, because his two daughters ran at Purdue, they're fast as hell. One almost qualified for
Olympic trials.
Just
they're faster than shit. Minutes. But it was so funny. We take off. It's like, I don't see him. I think he is gone. And I'm trying to find him. Yeah, I think he's gone. And then we're running around, and then all of a sudden people start asking me. I'll run by people, and they're like, oh, where's Scott? I'm like, well, Scott's in front of me. You know? Well, then we finished the race, and all of a sudden, later he comes and said, problem with the Carmel Marathon is it goes by his house.
Yeah.
And he'll pull into his house, and he'll catch a quick nap if he's not feeling good.
He's done that twice.
If it works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
You're talking about 5 hours.
I know.
But Diana, the best part is Diana's wife is on the outside of the neighborhood, and she'll run by and she'll say, where's Scott? And I'm like, he's probably at home, man.
You should go home and wait for him.
Yeah. So I didn't realize this. It looks like this only does an hour. So I'm going to stop it and then restart it.
I don't worry about that.
Unless you want to do more, are we done?
It's up to you.
Oh, I'm Zach. A shout out to you though. You're doing the Alcatraz. Oh.
Yes.
Don't take Joe with you because if he swam, you'd have to be pulling out.
Can I get away with the Squidward in the bay?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking about who's going to listen to this? Four people. Us four.
Yeah, right. Well,
It's going viral.
Maybe Lori, Tom's wife, will be nice and listen to it, right?
We're going to have at least 20.
We should say
you were talking about
minimum
the
minimum of 20. Wait,
you're talking about
went to Boston. Marcy was there, right?
Marcy, Donna.
This is people in the running.
Gary. Well,
Steve.
Sort of.
Steve Graber.
Pierre was there.
Joe. Pierre. Aaron
Moeller,
and Jeff.
Moeller, yeah. So we, you know,
Burger's been there.
Burger's been there a bunch. Laura's been there a bunch. Shelly and Jim. Jim's done Iron Man in Louisville, so he's.
That's pretty Shelly. Big.
Yeah, there's been a lot of.
I know we're missing somebody, but I don't know who it is.
Shout out to all of them.
When we were doing, I tell you, one of the cool marathons we did, we were Washington D.C. It was Marine Corps Marathon.
Yeah. That
was fucking cool. We went with Pat.
Did you do it?
Pat Rafferty and Todd went. And that was a cool one. You know, you do these things, and they're all. It depends on what they are.
Was that the one that you had? What was the one you told me about? You're running next to soldiers that have been in,
Marine Corps,
and they're yelling at each other, and it's an intense.
Guys are going an inch at a time up these hills, and this is probably the best. If you can do it, you got to do it probably when you feel in top condition, because it's a tough race. But that was probably the best, and they had that Occupy Wall Street bullshit going on at the same time.
Yeah,
so you're running along, and there's like warriors to your left. And pussies to your right.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. No shit, man. Huh. And I'm just sitting there with goosebumps and almost have to take a piss.
They're
watching that stuff evolve.
Yeah, so it's guys that have been injured from
guys in
military services, right?
Guys,
and they're
guys, girls with their legs blown off because of the IEDs, wherever there are, and shit. And they're just yelling. And then you finish at the, when you finish, first of all, it's probably, I don't know, maybe 50% are like me, never been in the military. But the rest of them are in the military, but all the water stops are by Marines. And when you finish up on this hill, it's Iwo Jima, I mean, it's a serious hill. They're out there in your ear saying you will not stop. They're everywhere along the course. When they see weakness, they zap it. I mean, they're in your face.
Yeah, like military style. Like, let's
military
go, go,
style.
Go,
so,
go,
if,
go.
You know, the military get it, so they might be deaf to it. But if you're a freaking civilian, it's
like you
yelling in your face, like, you will not be dangerous. And you start freaking getting it, man. And that's why that was the best part ever, because Todd Potter knows what I'm talking about. He had it here in his ear all the way.
So, that's DC. You remember the title of that event? That's
Marine Corps Marathon.
The Marine Corps Marathon, okay.
Yep.
I'd like to do that one of these days.
Yeah, if you ever want to see, and you get to see the Capitol and stuff while you're doing it, or the whole area.
That's Pentagon. Cool. I love D.C.
Huh? Pentagon, you get to see?
You start at the Pentagon? It was a good time.
So
you were talking about the CrossFit bike. The assault bike is arms and legs on a bike, basically. So you're pulling with your arms.
That's how embarrassing it was on the assault bike. So it was. You go as many calories as you can do in 25 seconds. Then you rest 5 minutes. Then you go 30 seconds. Rest 5 minutes. Go 40 seconds. And so the first 25 seconds, I did 10 calories.
Okay, sounds like.
And there was one guy, and he's actually an ex-Army guy, did 51.
Jeez.
In 25 seconds. And so I... Yeah, it's just crazy how those guys that have that big mass can go so much faster on the bike than I can go.
The only thing about the assault bike that frustrates
me...
But
let me tell you this. I can kill them in the mile.
Any distance running. We love when the CrossFit...
Seriously.
So my dad's also a CrossFit member. If you listen to the podcast with me and Josh, Josh talked about wanting to do it too. And so my dad, through my sister and her husband... have done CrossFit, and they got us into it, and Dad gets into it, and we both, I won't hear from my dad or my sister in a while, but when there's a CrossFit workout with anything more than a 500-meter run in it, we all text each other and are like, are you going? Because we know we're all three of us, all three of us roots. Well, I guess she's not a root anymore, but there's a mile in there. The roots are chomping at the bit. Yeah.
Leveling that out.
Oh, yeah.
We love that, and so. Yeah, all right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up. These two old men got to get to bed.
Got to go to the bathroom at our age.
Yeah, right.
Thanks
for listening.
Thanks.
all you listeners, first and foremost, I want to say thank you for tuning in. I also want to thank Joe, Tom, and my father, Steve, for stopping by and sitting down and having a chat with me. If you guys want any more information about us, feel free to follow us on Instagram at OffTheFrontPC with underscores instead of spaces. You can follow me, Root Zachary, RootZachary, on Instagram. That's all one word. And feel free to follow Josh at Turt McGirt. That's T-U-R-T underscore M-C underscore G-U-R-T. Thanks again for listening, and hope you have a great one.